listeners. I've always wanted to say that. Welcome back to The Gilded Thread with me, Irene O'Brien, and you have tuned into the fifth episode of my six-part podcast series, where I've been chatting with my fabulous guests about their lives as recalled through their own style memories. Last time I was on, I was speaking with Louis Copeland, and you sent me some great feedback remarking on how nice it was to have a man on the series, and also how much you loved his low-key Dublin ways and how evident his love of his family business was. And I have to agree, that was incredibly endearing, and I thoroughly enjoyed chatting to him. So thank you, Louis, and thank you guys for listening. And for those of you that have let me know through rates and reviews that you are enjoying the series, I am so appreciative. You all rock. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So now to this episode. So I kicked around the idea of this podcast for the guts of 2 years before finally biting the bullet. And I considered many different guises and themes in which to present the series, but ultimately I knew the guests I wanted. Rosemary Smith was there from day one. For any of you that don't know, Rosemary Smith is a pioneer in the male-dominated world of motorsports, having won some of the most iconic rallies in the world. And she remains an inspiration to so many on and off the track, which is a place that she still feels so comfortable. However, long before any of the now historical races in which she excelled, Rosemary was an accomplished model and very much in-demand dressmaker. I first became aware of Rosemary over 20 years ago when I got my first ever runaround car. My dad informed me that I would need to get lessons from Rosemary Smith and that he had organised it to take place over near Meath. I was like, Rosemary, who, where, why? Well, as you can imagine, once I heard the words rally driver from my father and style icon from my mother, I was more than willing to make the trip. And she was incredible. I was slightly awestruck. I just watched her command this vehicle in which we sat, and she was speaking this language of driving that I'd never heard before, explaining about revs and handling, taking me on an off-road course to negotiate and navigate obstacles. It was like I was in a TV show, and she was so cool, and I was so invested in her teaching and so proud that she thought me worthy of what I considered at that time to be boy car talk. And with every turn, I peeked at her regal profile and long, beautifully green, groomed red nails, I should say, taking in as much about her as I was the vehicle. And I was hooked on both the driving and Rosemary. So for years, I've thought of her, and my interest in any paper or radio show has always peaked significantly with the mention of her name. So as I say, when I was ruminating the idea of this podcast, Rosemary was on my wish list, and I was talking to my family about my plans. And one morning I was reminding my dad of our driving adventures and discussing why I thought she'd make a great guest. This was a number of months back, and that afternoon I attended the launch of the What's She Doing Here exhibition at the Little Museum in Dublin, which was brilliant celebration of females that were trailblazers in industries that were traditionally male dominated. So on entering, I was immediately struck by this full-length image of Rosemary staring out from the wall, helmet in hand, wearing one of those iconic boiler suits, and I was giddy with excitement reading her entry below. When I saw her glide into the room in real life, in all her statuesque glory, I knew that the time was right. I made introductions, and Rosemary kindly agreed to chat to me in the following weeks in her home, which is where our conversation starts. So when I met Rosemary, she was in the midst of working on her book, which is going to now be released on October 4th. It was ghostwritten by Anne Ingle, who she gives a name check during the chat, and it's set to tell the extraordinary story of her life in driving and also the personal battles she has survived. So in respecting that process and not wanting to ruin the read for anyone, including myself, we avoided any chat of the specific races and challenges that the book will cover, and instead we stuck to her life and style, which to me was a fascinating chat. And we discussed the path that brought her into modelling, how she excelled at the Grafton Academy, her time working with Irene Gilbert, running her own South Ann Street dressmaking studio, and how a chance visit from a neighbouring customer in South Ann Street led to her change of career. And exactly, of course, what one should wear when driving. That was very interesting to me. So I will stop gibbering on here and I will let you listen to the conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Rosemary, firstly, thank you so much for doing this for me and having me into your beautiful home. I just think this is the most serene setting out here. I was sitting in my car thinking, I could stay here for a while now.
Yeah, it's very pretty. When I left the other house, which is just up on the hill, and, you know, there's loads of land around. Yes. I never had neighbours because it was, you know, way up a long drive. And then when I moved down here and I thought, I won't last, I couldn't, it's too small.
Yeah.
But then the thought of moving again, And then when I got to know the neighbours, who are absolutely incredible, and now I love it because I know they'll always look after it if I have to go away, which I do quite a lot, and they'll always, and they have the keys for it, and you know, and anything, if I'm back late in the evening, Deborah next door, she'll come in and she'll have something for me to eat.
Lovely.
You know, and it's, I never had good neighbours. I never had neighbours, really.
You didn't know what it was to have neighbours,
no,
I suppose.
Didn't. And then when I got here, I thought, oh, this is lovely. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
And it's small and I can keep it myself. And, you know, I can do the garden like I did it this morning. And now when I get a few days off, which I haven't got at the moment, I'm really up to my eyes. But, you know, I've got all the plants. I'm going to plant them all around and then... Just as long as the place is pretty, I just like to come in that I can relax. I couldn't come into absolute chaos.
No.
Now, there is a bit of chaos going out in the back room because of the photographs and one thing and another. And, you know, there's paperwork all over the place.
Because, of course, you're in the middle of doing your
getting
book.
Getting the book.
Yeah, which must be
Well, it's
a huge project.
It is a huge project. Yeah. Now, I'm not writing it myself.
Yeah.
This lovely lady, Anne Ingle, is doing it. But... You still have to, and then you have to go through all these photographs and you have to remember. And then she knows more about me now than I do.
I can imagine.
She's looking it up and she's looking at other books and, you know, after I've been on various events and that sort of thing. And even going back to when I was dress designing, because that's what I started as.
Absolutely.
I started as a dress designer, and which I enjoyed well enough. But, you know, the difference between... You know, being in a room and cutting out patterns and picking fabrics and all that sort of carry on. I still enjoy, but I wouldn't want to do it as a full-time job. But
when you were getting a thrill from the new career, weren't you? That you couldn't really get probably in
After the first one I ever did, I thought, which was the biggest one, the Monte Carlo Rally, and I thought, oh, never again, slipping and sliding over snow and ice, day and night. And when I was off at the drive with this company, the Roots Group, and I turned it down flat.
Wow.
Because I said, no, I couldn't. I mean, I couldn't do it because I'd never done it before.
Yeah.
And,
but when you're saying slippery and sliding, because I'm going to bring you a little bit back to your childhood, if that's okay, to talk about kind of style and influence. And one of the things that struck me was that you had said before that your father taught you to drive and on grass, and that was the slipping and sliding days
it
as
was.
Well.
Yeah, oh yeah, that helped, definitely helped.
What age were you then?
13.
Okay, and prior to that, I love how I'm just passing that by as if 13 is a totally normal age to start driving.
On private ground.
On private ground.
It certainly is.
Yes, yeah.
But, I mean, way back then, first of all, women didn't drive very much anyway. And then, you know, suddenly, you know, and Dad said, you must learn to drive. You must learn to swim.
Yeah.
Which I did, both of them.
Well, but two really important things as well. And I know that you campaign an awful lot now for young people starting earlier to drive.
Yeah.
Well, earlier than getting behind the wheel and taking down a road. But can I ask you, prior to 13, just a little bit about when you were growing up? Because obviously, you know, you've modelled and you were a dress designer and we'll get to all of that. But there must have been a love of style or fashion that came from somewhere. Can you remember your early memories as a child? Were clothes important in your family?
Or was it? No, not in the family.
Yeah.
They're important to my mum and they were important to me.
Yeah.
And from way back, making the dolls clothes, because my sister was an academic, so she was reading. She never looked one way or the other. Roger, my brother, he went with my dad on the car side because Dad had a garage.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'd end up, my mum and I, and we'd be getting little bits of material and cutting them out and the dolls and
lovely.
All that
and you did
stuff.
That together?
Sometimes. She'd show me how, but that's where it came from. She knew how. So even before I actually started dress designing in the Grafton Academy, I really knew a lot of it.
Yes.
Because I did the whole course in 9 months, which normally took 2 years.
Wow.
But the woman in there, Miss Clotworthy, and she said, I said, you know, can I go and do the passing out exam? And she said, you haven't been here long enough. I said, well, let me try anyway. And I was 15 at the time.
Wow.
And I went in and I won the most promising student of the year, much to the disgust of some of the girls who'd been there for the full 2 years.
Well, I can imagine, but you know, it strikes me that you did so many things young. Did you know your own mind quite when you were young?
Not a clue.
Really?
Not a clue. I knew I didn't like school.
Okay.
I liked anything to do with sports, dresses, you know, sort of any sport.
Yeah.
Hockey, you know, tennis, golf. Anything. And I don't know, just that, because I was out, I was doing something. And I say to this day, I mean, if I Well, the nuns thought I was stupid because I wouldn't use my brains. But they told my adored father that I was stupid, so Daddy took me away straight away.
Oh, you wouldn't like that one bit to hear that your child, no.
He certainly didn't. But you see, nowadays, 15-year-olds can do what they like. I mean, they can go here, they can do that. I mean, nobody thinks they can go and have a few babies if they want to.
But they seem a lot older.
Oh, listen. I mean, I was 21, 22, basically, before I even went abroad, sort of thing. We just didn't do it. Now the kids say to me, we're going to Dubai for Christmas. Yeah, hello. And my brother and my sister, and they're 5 and 8. And I said, my God, we went to Bettystown.
Yeah, I know. Well, the world has just gotten smaller. So when you were going to Bettystown, were they family trips? Is that something you would do during the summer? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember what kind of things you would wear, or was there preparation you were thinking about that? Was it a big deal?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as I say, we were very young. We went all our lives. That's why we went for a family holiday. But, you know, always, and if you think back to those days, those leggings that everybody's wearing now, we wore back then. We wore the hot pants. We wore little short skirts. You know, we wore exactly the same clothes then, except for when it came to anything like party dress or anything. They were very demure always.
Yeah.
And little puff sleeves and, you know, knee-length skirts and so on. But
What year was this about, when you were wearing those shorts and the skirts on the holidays?
Oh, it'd be 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah, isn't it gas to think? I mean, I never think of leggings even being around then, because I think leggings, you know, they were the 80s and they're now, but everything's cyclical, isn't it?
Oh, look, as they say, if you keep clothes long enough, they'll always come back into fashion.
Yeah.
But anyway, then I did the Grafton Academy. Then I went to work for Irina Gilbert. And then I went.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just for a very short time.
Yeah.
Really, I was only a gopher. I was picking up pins and so on, sticking labels on parcels. But she showed me how things should be done. Like, you'd never get a silver hook and eye, because the hook and eye would be all covered with tiny stitches, like a blanket stitch.
Wow.
So if it were on a blue, you'd have a blue hook and eye, you know, this sort of thing.
Yeah, incredible attention to detail.
Oh, incredible. She was wonderful. And then I went down the quays to Mrs. Cullen, and then we were cutting out hundreds of dozens at one. They were cheapies. And then my mother opened our place in South Ann Street.
And your mother opened that. So what was her background? Did she have a fashion background?
No, she was. She had an arty background, because her father was an architect and a quantity surveyor, and they were from a very big family. And that's where she got her love of stuff was design of houses and decoration. And we lived in something like 17 houses growing up.
Are you serious?
Oh, I hated it. Every time we'd get a beautiful house and it would be all done up and beautiful curtains, and my mum would say to my dad, "Oh, John, I saw a lovely house." And, you know,
and that was why you were moving each time, because she was finished with that particular house.
Yeah.
Really?
But you see, you've got to go back to her. When my mum and dad married, like, wives didn't work.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to work, because it would be sort of, "Oh, can your husband not keep you and the family?" Yeah, just sort of carry on.
I know.
So that was that. And so, end of story, we'd move and we'd move. And I vowed when I got married I would not move.
Yeah.
But circumstances always change. But I haven't moved that much. I've had about 3 different places.
Yeah.
But then, because I was travelling an awful lot with the rallying, I was away sort of 9 months of the year, basically. And you know, just then the business, obviously I had to give up the business. It was either the driving or the dress designing, and I thought. And then one woman that I made a wedding dress herself, and her 6 bridesmaids, and her mother, and her going away outfit, and blah, 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 blah. She never paid.
Oh,
so
gosh.
That sort of broke the business.
So the business was started in what year?
Now, do you see, you are sounding like Anne England.
No, have you any
no
idea what decade
I have? Probably the 60s. No, it couldn't have been. 50s, late 50s, I suppose.
Late 50s. So you had finished in the Grafton Academy. Mm. You had excelled at the Grafton Academy, by all accounts. And was the aim always to open your own boutique at that stage?
No.
Or no?
No. I didn't really know. See, I'm better if somebody tells me what to do. I mean, to this day, I am much better. You know, the people I'm dealing with now with the book and that sort of thing, and they're saying, "We need that and we want that and don't do that." And I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine when my co-driver is sitting beside me and she's saying, "Straight on, left, blah, di da di da di da di da." Grant.
Yeah.
Left to my own devices, I think, what am I going to do now? You know, and I know there are loads of things I should be doing, but...
Do you second guess yourself? No. So was it your mum's suggestion then to open the store?
Well, no, it wasn't a store, and it wasn't... in those, they were like dressmaking rooms.
Okay.
I think that's what they were.
Okay, so it wasn't a shop front.
No, no.
It was your workshop.
Upstairs. It was upstairs, but they
on
came
South
in...
On Ann Street. Is it near where the tailor's is now, above the furrier? Do you know...
Just down the road.
Just down there,
23
yeah.
South Ann Street. It was a children's shop underneath.
Okay.
Mrs. Patterson, and then we were on the first floor. But, no, it was nice, and, you know, I had two people working with me. My mum didn't come in out very much at that stage. And I used to do some lovely stuff, lovely, loved wedding gowns and this type of thing. And but as I say, that one put me out of business.
So that you would be, they would commission you to make the dresses. Mm. And was there any such thing as taking deposits or anything in that day? No.
No. And I'd buy the fabric as well.
Of course you would.
And go down to Brown Thomas. And, but you see, and this is how I got into the routing, because one of the people who came to me, she wanted a shirt, rather this type of thing.
I know, you have a beautiful, colourful blouse on today.
And, you know, the tight trousers and that sort of thing. But she used to buy Hermes scarves.
Oh, right.
And I'd make the shirt out of the Hermes scarves.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they were, at that time, they were about £29.
Yeah.
And, I mean, now they're about 100 and something pounds.
And the rest, yeah.
I have lots of them upstairs in the drawer, but you don't wear them any longer.
Well, no, well, we can make them into a blouse together for you, Rosemary. I know you know how.
I never make anything for myself now.
But do you still appreciate good tailoring?
Oh, I love good clothes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I were very wealthy, I would buy good, good, good clothes.
Yeah.
I'm not wealthy. And so I buy a lot of clothes, but cheaper clothes, because then I don't mind sort of throwing them away.
Yeah.
But when I see something, I'd say, ooh, that is, you know, money.
Yeah.
You know, you can... Money.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Oh, no, I love good clothes. I would love to be able to just walk in and say, I'll have that and that and that and that.
Yeah.
I can't. But it doesn't worry me.
No.
I mean, you know, if you try to present yourself well.
Yeah.
And always try and have the hair done. And normally I'd have the eyelashes stuck on, but I haven't got time.
You look absolutely fabulous. I was thinking to myself coming in, oh my God, my nail polish is smudged now. And I was thinking, I bet her nails are going to be immaculate. And the first thing I saw are those beautiful nails. Everything so well groomed.
But I do it all myself. You see, everybody says, oh, are they stuck on? I said, no, they grow there. Who does them for you? Me. Who colours your hair? Me.
Really?
No, I go to Peter Marks, obviously, and a lovely girl, Anne, down there. She'll trim it and blow dry it and so on and so on. But I just... Now, if you saw me here before you arrived about an hour ago in the dressing gown, no makeup on, the hair standing on end, having been out in the garden.
Well,
the grass.
And listen, that's the way it should be when people are in their home and their sanctuary. But, you know, it struck me when I first met you, one of so many people you've met over the years, so you'd never remember, but my dad brought me for a driving lesson to you.
Mm.
And he said to me, you know, I don't want you just going out on the road now. Your little car, I had a little Toyota Starlet, so old by the time I got it, but absolutely loved it. And I was going to be going to college to Ballyfermot, so I needed to drive from Kilmacud. And he said, I'm going to bring you to Rosemary Smith. I said, who's Rosemary Smith? And then everyone else, anyone I mentioned it to, that if I mentioned it to anyone a little bit older than me, oh my God, Rosemary Smith, that's so great, that's so cool. And then I'd say to people, I've been taught by a rally driver. And people would say, oh, that's so cool. But you know, it struck me, as many people would speak about the fact that, you know, how talented you were and really what kind of a trailblazer you were and what you had achieved, the same amount of comment would be given to your appearance and how glamorous you were. And, you know, over the years, when I've read things about you and certainly coming to meet you today, read things and listened to things, you know, it struck me that so much of your identity in driving was tied up in the fact that you were female. And it also struck me that you used that to your advantage rather than rallied against it.
Yeah.
You know, initially, were you... Okay, I mean, you said in your own words that you feel there was kind of, you were taken on sometimes as kind of the token female leggy blonde.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like you knew how to spin that and you knew how to surprise them.
I didn't.
Really?
It was quite accidental. It was quite accidental. Purely from my modelling days, I couldn't go out, whether it was out to drive day, night, day, night, day, night, without having the eyelashes stuck on and whatever. I mean, in the early days, you didn't have driving suits and that sort of thing. You just wore whatever you wore. And always the gloves, always the nails done, always. And then I'd have, because taking on and off the helmets, your hair would be a mess. So yeah. I used to have all these little hats, either caps or the, so. And always before I went into a finish of some big event, I'd make sure we had made up enough time that I could have the car washed and put on the old lipstick and so on and so on and so on. Because, I mean, sometimes the cars, they weren't that fast. And I knew that, what are we going to win? Well, we will win something, maybe. But at least if you look good, you might get photographs taken.
Okay.
And that was the sort of mindset, because, you know, as the first competition manager I ever had, he said, remember, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah.
So I said, well, if I can't win outright, I'm going to have to make the appearance and keep myself. And then the photographers would come along and they would take photographs. Yeah. Because I was new on the scene, the international scene. There were a good few women driving then. But, you know, sometimes, I hate saying this, but they were absolutely lovely girls. But they looked like little men, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly this, and I was called the blonde, what was it? The blonde farmer, because I lived on a farm. never worked the farm or anything like that, but blonde model farmer or something from Ireland.
Wow.
Ooh, from Ireland. Ooh. At that time, you know, on doors and things like that, going when I went to London, and it automatically said, no dogs, no blacks, no Irish.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what am I doing here? Getting a drive when there are a lot of English girls who maybe should have got the drive. But anyway, the man who was the competition manager, he knew what he was doing, you know, and he thought, well, the cars weren't that competitive at the time. And so we might as well get publicity.
So, and was this the first company that took you on?
Yeah.
Bring me back a little bit to when you did the modelling coincide with the Grafton Academy, or how did that come about?
Well, how it all came about was because I was very tall at a very young age, and because my sister was about this height and my brother was, though they were older.
So you were
than
head
I was,
and shoulder above both.
Yeah, and I used to slouch along all the time. And it was just, you know, my uncle said, stand up straight and be proud of your height.
Yeah.
And I said, So then my mother said, you're going to go to Miriam Woodburn for what they call deportment classes.
Oh, yes.
So I went to that.
And were you excited by that prospect?
No, I hated it.
Really?
Oh, no.
You didn't want the attention on you?
No way.
Yeah.
No way. But I went to that, and she was a very nice woman indeed, and she could understand because she herself was very tall.
Yes.
So she said, don't mind them now, you know, chin up and so on. So then it came that one of the big French designers was coming into Dublin. And a lot of the models in those days, they were a good size 12, 14. No skinny ones.
Yeah.
But this French crowd coming into Brown Thomas, and there were only two of us, Adrian Ring, who's long since dead, and myself, were thin enough to wear those clothes.
Okay, so that was your first opportunity then. And of course, I mean, it's a French designer, it's Brown Thomas. People are going to know who you are very soon then, did they, in the modelling world?
Well, yeah and no. But you see, if I'd had confidence, I could have done, I could have gone to Paris maybe and modelled. But I, you know, they want me.
Yeah.
You know, scarecrow.
And you were probably, you had probably have years of shying away from your height a little bit. Because
yes,
were you singled out in school for being tall?
Oh, yeah.
So in school you were tall.
Is it cold up there? Have you snow in your hair?
Oh, I know. And they don't know the remarks they're making, do they? Was that your fellow students?
No. They were grand. No,
really?
They were grand because my cousin Noelle was in the same class. And no, that was fine. It was the nuns.
Really?
Oh, they were horrible creatures.
No, you didn't sound like you had a good time there at all then. And when you, when your dad took you out of school that time, were you still modelling at that stage?
Oh, I hadn't started that
You
stage.
Hadn't started. Okay, so you started when you were doing, in Grafton Academy.
Basically.
Were you able to model your own clothes? You were a good advertisement
yes,
for them.
No, I did for the final pass-out parade.
Yeah.
I modelled them myself. But I have some photographs and my God, I looked like a scarecrow.
I bet you didn't.
Oh,
I bet you looked beautiful.
No, I didn't. Oh, no, I was very plain. I am very plain. I make up, you know, the face and that sort of thing. But I'd love to go now and get the old facelift done.
Well, Rosemary Smith, as I said, everyone remarks at how glamorous you are. And I just think that...
Yeah, but the wrinkles and lines get to me now. But then I will tell you something. That I got an idea about doing a fashion show for RTE because I had done one or two things with them.
Yeah.
And I got it all out on paper and what we'd do, and we'd go up to Donegal and we'd see the weavers and we'd do this and we'd do that and we'd do the other. And, wonderful idea. It hadn't been done at all. Now, really great idea. And the whole thing, and I went to meetings and gave them all my ideas and so on. And then I got a call saying they were going to start filming in a little boutique in South Ann Street. And would I... they didn't even say, would I like to be there? And I said, yeah, well, what'll I do? I mean, what have I got to do? What do you mean, what have you got to do? It's nothing to do with you. And I said, excuse me, this is my whole idea.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, but I mean, you know. So I went down on the morning, I'll never forget it, and exactly the things, and it went on from there. And they did everything that I had said, going up to Donegal, going to France, going here, doing this, doing that. And I wasn't even involved in it. But I was warned afterwards, don't ever put a proposition to any television company. They'll say, yeah, yeah, or they'll turn it down flat and then a year later they'll be running with it.
Listen, it's repackaged. And can I tell you that exact same thing has happened to me in my career. And I mean, I've never been so stunned because I came up with an idea. We discussed it. There was a whole team. And suddenly I wasn't part of that team anymore. And I thought, well, sure, they're doing other things. And next thing I saw the RTE guide and the name of the show and the star and everything on the front of it. And I thought, well, I've learnt my lesson. But then how do you go about it then? Because, you know, you want to generate ideas. I think it's a tricky thing, you know, to do.
It's very tricky. And to this day, it's very tricky.
Yeah.
Because I've had other people coming in and, you know, saying, and one is a very close friend of mine, and he put these ideas to RTE about various motoring programmes and one thing and another, and the next thing he sees it going ahead.
I know.
And he wasn't involved at all.
Yeah.
But, no, funny enough, the motoring programme I did 13 episodes, three series of 13 episodes.
Yeah.
And that was absolute crap, I'd say. And I did it.
Did you ever watch it?
No, I never watch anything.
You never watch anything you do?
No.
Yeah.
But, no, the only thing I did watch was the one recently, the Tommy Tiernan one.
Oh, yes.
Which I loved.
Yeah,
I loved him.
Fabulous.
He's a dope.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was much longer than that piece because it was pre-recorded.
Of course.
But he was very funny.
And why did you enjoy that in particular?
Because I don't care any longer. I don't care what... I care what people think about me. Of course I do. But I can hold my own now.
Yeah.
You see, years ago, I mean, if you'd been asking me questions now, I'd be saying, yes. Dead silence.
Really?
And then you'd be asking something else and I'd say, no. Oh, I couldn't.
Really?
When we won things on rallies, I would send my co-driver up first at times.
Really? Well, where does your confidence come from now then? Experience?
I suppose it is, yeah. But then you see, also, I had a mother who, if you asked me a question, she'd answer.
Really?
And with the result, I retired totally into my shell at that stage.
Yeah.
So after she died, I mean, that sounds a dreadful thing, but after she died and then I was left on my own and then I had to fight battles, various things, husbands, houses, you know. But as I say, buy the book and you'll see it all.
I know. We can't go into too much to talk about the book. Yeah. But I'm really interested, as I said, in kind of the style and the style evolution. When you were modelling, was there anything that... you know, you were modelling that you had never seen before? Were there new ideas in fashion that you were coming across at that stage? Or did you keep quite up to date with the new trends and movements?
Yeah, but you see, like, if you look at Mary Quant back then, and
yeah.
I modelled a few of hers, and then you look at Victoria Beckham now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure she's a great girl and great... But to me, those fashions, all she had to do is take up a book from the 60s, 70s, and then she... redoes them, whereas back there they might have been, say, 30-40 pounds. Now they're about 1,000 or 1,500, which I think is criminal for any clothes, to be very honest.
Yeah,
they're not worth that sort of money. Fabrics are expensive, the finish of them is, and it's most important. But I mean, how can you justify? I pick up the magazines down the hairdresser and it says this dress by somebody, it's only 5,250 sterling.
Yeah. Yes, certainly.
Yeah. Buy a car for that. What are you doing?
Well, when I first used to start reading the fashion magazines, of course, they were the English ones, really.
Oh,
you
yes.
know, when I was younger, and they were so expensive, and they would say, let's say, 5,000STG, and I thought they were saying staggering. I never realized it was sterling, but then when I realized, I thought, well, also staggering. Yeah. When also you think about staggering. The price of it, you know,
and the price of shoes. But I mean, there are people obviously who have that sort of money, so
yeah, they do, it doesn't and that's how they choose to spend
difference.
It
exactly. No, I love fashion. Oh, I like old fashion magazines and so on. Mind you, I don't have any in the house, which is a funny thing. Mostly they're motoring books, but
yeah.
No, I love fashion. I must, you know, it's just second nature to me now.
Yeah.
And yet, every time I'm asked to go to somewhere, what am I going to wear? I've wardrobes full of clothes.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of them I've never even worn.
Yeah.
And then I have a lovely lady friend, and she, one of her sons was in the fashion business, and beautiful clothes, and she would get them, and then she wouldn't wear them because she didn't like them. And she gives them to me.
Oh, happy days. Happy I love days. When that happens. I love when so that do happens. I. And then you can pass on yourself as well. Do you remember the first thing you wore when you were modelling?
No, I have no idea.
And does anything stand out of any of the pieces you wore? Were you ever very excited to be wearing it or very uncomfortable in it?
No. The thing is that when you're actually modelling, because modelling, well, if it's a ramp show, you're in and out, and in and out, and in and out, and you're like, but there's always a dresser there to say, now you do that, and you wear that with that, and those shoes, and that, which is fine. Again, somebody telling me what to do.
Yes.
And then when we did fashion photography, that was altogether different, because that was, you had your outfit, and you might stand around for 20 minutes, 25 minutes in that particular outfit. Now, some things I wore, I really disliked. You know, they were sort of, to me, they were old matronly, and, you know, now they'd probably be the height of fashion. But we used to do all this in the Sunday Independent, you know, and they had A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and which is the best. And there'd be myself and Winnie Butler and somebody else, and they'd have all these, and we'd be standing this way and this way, you know. And it's so stilted.
Yeah.
But, no, I always loved evening wear, yes. As I said before. And I used to love some of these ball gowns, which were, you know, just absolutely gorgeous. And I loved wearing those.
Yeah.
But I was very slim, so I could wear the plainest of dresses. You know, the news girls now, usually TV3, and they little round neck, sleeves,
yes.
Slim, straight to here.
Yeah.
But I love that, and I love it to this day.
Yeah. Well, they're beautifully cut, and I think that shows. And if you had the figure to show that off as well, you know that you feel good in it.
But you've got to feel good in something. You know, as I say, I'm going to Luxembourg now, week after next, for a big dinner. And I went looking for something the other day. Now, I have plenty of evening sort of stuff, but I found this most... I walked into the shop, and I sort of looked around, and I said, that's it. And it's fine and flimsy and ankle length and beautiful
dress.
Colours. And dress, sleeves, you know, with my crinkly and, you know... No, I don't like my body in this day and age. No. Years ago, the older you get, your skin sags in every party. As they say, it's all gone south.
But can you not appreciate how well your body is treating you? Because you keep so well. And, you know, you told me about a birthday that you had last August.
Yeah.
And you're an octogenarian, as they say now. And I just think... You know, I know people half your age and less that are kind of dragging their heels behind them. You seem to have such a zest for life.
Well, because I've really had to look after myself for the last 40 odd years. But as I told you, I've got the heart stents, pure stress, pure wondering whether my house is going to be taken from over my head and all this sort of carry on. You know, it is very stressful. And then I said, well, either sink or swim. So I said, I'm going to swim. And then, you know, I had to get something to do, and I started the driving school, and then I started getting more drives around the world again and going places, and I just sort of stuffed them.
Was that a consequence of the starting the driving school? Did that put you in the public eye a little bit again?
Yes, absolutely. But I couldn't get any help from any major body, like the government or the, you know, well, there wasn't an RSA then, but, you know, nobody. Well, what do you want to do that for? Why are you doing that? Now, I saw it in America. My sister's children all went to driver's ed. And I thought, what a great idea.
Yeah.
But nobody put their hand in their pocket. my very good friend, and she's very unwell at the moment, God help her, she was the first to say, Rosie, I'll lend you money, get a car, and start it.
Okay. So, and you knew you were onto something there.
Yeah. But
you know, I know I'm jumping back and forth because I'm just interested when, you know, it's, you were taking you back to South Ann Street and you were still in the shop. It was then that a lady came in that kind of changed your fate. Did you know her to start with?
Yeah, she owned a coffee shop in South Ann Street. I knew her to see. She was very, you know, and she was an English girl. Just she wanted clothes and then she said to me, you know, I'm going on an event and come with me.
So, you know, fate changed and you moved on from the dressmaking to the driving, first kind of as a hobby and then obviously it evolved. And you were talking about the company taking you on and you being, you know, part of all the photographs and everything. So for practical reasons, you were wearing the hats in between the races. Were you concerned with what you were wearing clothes-wise, just come from that background? How did you decide what to wear?
Well, I mean, if you're going to the snow, what do you wear but white?
Okay.
So, you know, I had white boots, white tight jeans, a lovely sweater my sister actually knitted for me, white with green border on it, and a bobbly hat with the green and the white around the top.
But it sounds fabulous. Yeah, it was gorgeous. And was it comfortable for driving?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because as long as you have plenty of room that you're not sort of impeded in any way.
Yes.
No, it was fine.
And
I always, before we had to, it was compulsory that we wore, you know, these awful zip-up driving suits.
Yeah.
I have a few of them upstairs now, and I just, but they're very sensible because, I mean, you know, if anything was to go on fire, I had a very good friend, and though his was a driving suit, but it was only a 5 second driving suit, and he went up in flames race. Yeah. But anyway, look, whatever you do in life, remember, you take chances. Purely, I mean, everybody takes chances. If you go out on that road today, you can get run over.
Yes.
I mean, but you've got to be sensible about these things. And it's just everything now evolves around safety as far as, well, all the road cars, but a lot of the stuff that's in road cars now was developed either on the racetrack or on the rally track or something. So now, I mean, you go out there and you have a thing that tells you you're parked too close to something, you're going too fast, change gear, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you practically don't have to drive it. It drives itself.
Yeah.
But in the olden days, listen to me, it was the olden days. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And life has changed so dramatically the whole way. I mean, the youngsters of today, they have everything and nothing to look forward to.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them have had everything. Like I say about these youngsters going to Dubai for Christmas, going to here, you know, daddy's bought a new yacht down in wherever it might be, Marbella or Monte Carlo or something. They've had it all by the time they're about 15.
Yeah.
Like I had nothing. We used to ride our bicycles around and, you know, but we enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I suppose it was the promise of adventure to come then, wasn't
it?
That
was just it. But now they get everything so young, you know. And then, but a lot of them now, I love working with them. I love working with youngsters because when I started, it was Miss Smith. And then it was Rosemary. And then it was, now it's Rosie. How are you, Rosie? Will you come to my party? I'll be 17, such and such, you know.
Yeah, isn't that fabulous?
But there's no respect for anybody or anything now.
Yeah.
I mean,
so do you enjoy your time with them or are you a bit, do you wish it was more reserved again?
Oh, no, I enjoy my time.
Yeah.
Because you can't feel old.
Yeah.
You just can't. Yeah. Because, and they're telling you about the new dress or the new makeup they've got and they're going to this first party and, you know, but it keeps you young.
Yeah. And do you like seeing the style of them coming in and...
Well, a lot of them would wear a school uniform.
Okay.
They're leisure.
It's part of the school. The tracksuits.
The tracksuits and that sort of thing.
Do you remember, was there any outfit that stood out from your childhood that you loved wearing?
Well, there was one, and looking back at the pictures of it, well, I've got one picture of it, and I thought it was the bee's knees. I thought it was gorgeous, and it was sort of a silky fabric. And it was the time that the dress took about there, but it had the frill around the end.
Around to your knee.
And then it had the little high neck, and then it had the thing, and it had a frill instead of a sleeve. It had to match this frill. And
the
then
frill had, going over the shoulder to match the knee. Yeah.
And then it had the tie belt.
Oh, lovely.
And the bow at the back. Oh, God.
What colour was it?
Blues and blues and blues and lilacs. Colours I love.
Yeah.
Like that dress I just bought last week to go to wherever I'm going, Luxembourg. But it was lovely. And then it was only when somebody, some girl said, you look ridiculous in that dress.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, you see, this is the difficulty. And I loved it up to that. But you see, from there, these little skindly legs, you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, big feet, because I have big feet. And, you know, and when she said that,
oh,
and that was it.
Of course, you'd be crushed. And do you remember what you had gotten it for? Was it for an occasion?
Yeah, it was for a wedding down in, I always remember the Methodist Church in Rathgar, because my dad was a Methodist.
Yes.
And was one of his, I think it might have been even my aunt who was getting married, something like that. Oh, I remember the occasion very well.
And I suppose when you had gotten a dress like that, then you were, once the wedding was over, you were able and expected to wear it to lots
everything.
Of different things.
Until
exactly.
You grow out of it.
Until you grow out of it. Oh, what a shame. And are there any clothes that you particularly remember your mom wearing that you thought, yeah, that interests me, or I'm interested in that style?
No.
No, you weren't taken by her style necessarily.
Because a lot of it were these, if you look at any pictures of the people sort of taken after the war and that sort of thing, and they had the big high shoulders and little, these suits, and the little into the waist, you know, and to here, and then the skirt down to about there.
Quite austere.
Very austere.
Yeah.
No. I can't think of anything that, yes, when just before, around, well, maybe when she turned 80, I'm not sure, I bought her an outfit in, and was Mirror Mirror at the time.
Oh yeah, Mirror Mirror.
And it was that colour red, you know, the sort of darkish
red, deep
silk.
Red. Yeah.
And it was rather like this, like a shirt, but a lovely pleated skirt, quite long on her down to there. And the colour, now I'd never seen her wear that colour before, and she wasn't sure, but she had lovely sort of curly grey hair and so on. And that really, and I remember that so distinctly, but up to that, I'd no recollection of anything that I really would stand out in my life.
And considering you know, you're saying that she was wearing the austere clothes and coming out of that particular time as well, did she think that you going into fashion was a little bit lightweight, or was she quite happy with you doing that?
No, she was, oh no, because you see, instead of what they should have done is send me back into another school, but I wouldn't go to school because, you know, I just couldn't learn.
Yeah.
I mean, to this day, I was telling about the computer.
Yeah.
I went to computer courses and I'd be there, and I went to three sessions of 10 lessons. And the woman, she said, Rosie, wake up. Now I'm sitting there with my eyes wide open behind it. I've no interest.
Yeah.
No interest whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it's the same. I mean, Deborah's always saying to me, you'll have to learn. I said, oh, I'm a bit long in the tooth now for that.
Well, I don't believe that, because I'd say you could learn anything, because you seem to be someone that has evolved an awful lot, you know, kind of during your life. Do you not
agree?
It
doesn't interest me.
No, well, that doesn't interest you, but if something interested you, is that a little bit different? And as kind of moving on then into your teens and into your 20s, and as your different careers were progressing, are there any particular outfits you remember wearing, be it for award ceremonies or anything very glamorous, that stand out?
The one that I loved more than anything else, I made it myself, and it was a voile. You know what voile fabric is? And it was absolutely, I can see it to this day, it was brown and white dotted. Remember they used to have the little fluffy dots on it?
Yeah.
And it had this enormously full skirt with loads and loads and loads of petticoats under it, right to the ground.
Oh, lovely.
Strapless top, brown and white, ribbon around like that.
Just around the top of the bust.
Just around like this, around to the back. And then I got flowers, and I put the flowers over the back like that, over the zip. I had trailers of the brown and white coming right down onto the ground behind me, and the flowers then running down on the trailer. I loved that
dress.
It
sounds incredible.
It was a beautiful dress, absolutely beautiful.
What did you make it for? Was there an occasion you made it for?
Some party. There were lots of parties then, you know, or dance. Handball. It was a handball, I remember now.
Okay. Yeah. And would you rewear dresses then?
Oh, yeah.
You know now people have this big thing that they say, oh, I've already been seen in it. My picture's on Facebook.
No, back then, nothing like that. I mean, if I was going with the same group of people somewhere, no, I'd probably make another one. Because I used to run them up on the table, you know. Oh, I'm going such and I better chop it out.
And was that your first thought when you were going somewhere, I'm going to make something?
Oh, usually. Yeah.
Where would you get your fabric?
Cassidy's and O'Connell Street. Brown Thomas, of course, had them as well. Cleary's had a lot. There was another place in Talbot Street. There are very few now.
I mean, Hickey's is really where everyone's going all the time in. Because even the place on Castle Market closed down, didn't it?
Oh, yes, that funny little place.
Yeah, yeah.
They had some lovely
things. They did have some.
But you had to root for it. Yes. And find it. No, I find now, you see, if I want to make something now, and the fabric I like be 40 or 50 euro, a metre. Mm-hmm. Then you have to get the lining and the zip and the this and the that, and then you have to bring it home. Now, if I make a mistake, there's my 200 or 300 euro down the drain.
I know, it's
now
true.
I can walk into a shop, say, yeah, I like that. I don't like that. I like that. So, I mean, it's too expensive. My cousin brought me back some gorgeous raw silk from India. Oh. Now, when I say raw silk, it's not the very fine. It's got the things through it.
Yeah.
And a beautiful colour. I love sort of that colour, but much brighter.
Kind of a pink, gorgeous. Yeah.
Cerise colour.
Yes.
And I said, I'll get it run up somewhere. Well, I was going in and out of some of these dressmakers. Oh, yeah, well, that could be. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, no, I wouldn't do it like that. I said, that's how I want it. No. And I want it lined. And so, no. 400 euro for making it. 300 or 400 euro.
And were they surprised when you were able to come back with, I'd like it done this way and how much knowledge you had? Did you get it made?
No. The fabric
you still have the fabric.
Yeah.
And would you ever think of making it yourself? Because, you know, you have so much time in your hands at the moment. Sorry. I just wanted to ask you, you know, I was talking earlier about the fact that you, everyone commented on the fact that you were female for so long in your career. Mm. And now so many people comment on your age. And I suppose you've been representing kind of the underrepresented, in my opinion, in lots of ways in the media. And you've, whether you wanted to or not, kind of become a spokesperson at lots of different stages in your life. Is that something that sits easy with you, or do you acknowledge that now?
Oh, yeah. But see, as I say, I don't care any longer. Yeah. I really don't. I can stand up and I can make a speech. No notes, no anything. Give me the microphone.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've done things with Mary Kennedy and people like that, and they're asking these very nice questions. Oh, here, give me the microphone.
Well, do you feel then you're being celebrated now for all of those things
I think so.
Yeah, you were in the minority for a long time.
Oh. And you see, when you go up and then suddenly something happened and you end up in a courtroom and then... It's the most demoralising thing. So if you're not very confident in the beginning, I mean, that just knocks the socks off you.
I can imagine. Dreadful. I can imagine. Really? Yeah. So you've built it all up over the years and you're ready to celebrate it. And finally, can I just ask you, for, you know, people that are listening or for people that are kind of having a hard time or doing different things or trying to find their way, why is fashion or appearance, why is it important to spend time on yourself in that way?
Well, it depends. I mean, I've been listening to some of these girls who've been raped, their children have been burnt by their ex-husbands and this sort of thing. They can't. Fashion would be the last thing on their mind.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's very difficult. I mean, if, you know, you're very happy and you've money, you know, then of course you think about fashion.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was in the doldrums, I didn't think, but then I didn't go out.
Yeah.
I was so... Absolutely.
Yeah.
No. But it doesn't. But I still couldn't go out without trying to look a bit, you know, good.
Mm.
But, you know, even to go and buy a new lipstick at one stage, do I have the money, you know?
Yeah.
It's very difficult. And it's very difficult for people who are going to have their houses repossessed. Their children have no food on the table. They're not going to be thinking of fashion.
No, they're not.
There's no way. So, you know, I mean, fashion is... important to a lot of people who have good, ordinary, and when I say ordinary, you know, nice husband, nice house, they're not stressed over, the children are all at school, there's plenty to eat, course they'll think of fashion. Yeah, mm-hmm. Every woman does.
Yeah.
But not if they're going through traumas, I feel.
No.
Having gone through from time to time, I can see I've been there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. It doesn't mean much then at that stage. But for the day-to-day, you're putting your best foot forward and you like investing that time in yourself.
Yeah, well, it doesn't take long because, you know, when you've been modelling and you don't get that long, you sort of, and then put on the old, and if I get up and I know I have to be somewhere at such and such a time, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and I get up and I can be up, shower, into my clothes, because I lay out the clothes the night before.
Oh, yes, always. I do that as well.
And then, and in the car and away. And invariably I'm early. You know, because this time thing, because, you know, when we were driving, if you weren't there on the minute, that was it. You got 16 marks or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and I'm automatically I'm on time now. That's why I'm keeping an eye on that, because I don't want to be late.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway. And is there, what's the best thing about the stage you're at in life now?
Well, I can do anything I like, and I can save what I like.
Yeah.
And I've had a better life in myself, my own life, whatever you like to say, in the last sort of 20 odd years.
Yeah, you've come into your own and know who you are. Well, it's been such a pleasure getting to know who you are today, and thank you so much. I could stay all day chatting to you, and I really appreciate it. Best of luck with the book. We'll have to read that now and learn more about everything as well. So I really appreciate your time. Out in September.
Yes.
And we should really look forward to that. We'll be counting down the weeks. Thank you so much, Rosemary.
You're very welcome.
Well, I don't know about you, but I have just pre-ordered Rosemary's book, Driven, which is now set for release, as I say, on October 4th, because I am even more enthralled than I was before, which I didn't realise would be possible. Do let me know if you read it. Maybe we can exchange notes, or maybe even have a follow-up chat with Rosemary herself, and find out how that process worked out for her. Now, as always, a massive thank you to my guest, Rosemary, and also to you guys for tuning into The Gilded Thread. It means so much that you've chosen to listen to this podcast once again, and I really do hope you enjoyed the conversation. Again, please do, I know it's so boring, but please do rate and review on iTunes if you can. And I look forward to chatting in your ear again next time. Thank you so much for listening.